Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production, now available on Apple Podcasts, Podcast One, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
Welcome to the Feel Good Podcast with Kimberly Snyder. My goal is to help you develop a holistic lifestyle based on our four cornerstone philosophy: food, body, emotional well-being, and spiritual growth. This holistic approach will help you feel good, which I define as being connected to your most authentic, highest self. And this is the place from which your energy, confidence, creativity, true power, and true beauty will start to explode. Every week, we provide you with interviews from top experts in their field or a solo cast from yours truly to support you in living your most beautiful, healthy, and joyful life. I'm your host, Kimberly Snyder, founder of Saluna, New York Times bestselling author, and holistic wellness, nutrition, and meditation teacher. Let's get started. Hi, loves, and welcome back to our Monday interview podcast. I am so excited for our return guest, Dr. Will Cole, who is someone that I feel so connected to and I just love speaking to. He is a leading functional medicine expert. He was named as one of the top 50 functional and integrative doctors in the nation. He's a health advisor and he's the host of the Art of Being Well podcast. He's also a best-selling author with several books out there. And today we are talking about many different aspects of holistic care, including how best do we care for our bodies when we are overcoming trauma, when we are making big shifts. So I can't wait to share this newest conversation with Dr. Cole. Before we get into it, I'm going to mention our incredible fan of the week. And her name, his or her name is Casey Healy Holistic Health. And he or she writes, "My morning ritual. Kimberly's insight, voice, and vulnerability encourages me to be my best self. Thank you." Thank you so much, my love, Casey Healy Holistic Health, for being in our community and taking a moment to leave us a review. It really does fill my heart. Those of us that are podcasters know we're speaking into this mic. We're just putting this information out, and to have that beautiful feedback come back, that exchange of energy really does mean so much. So thank you so much, my love. Thank you for being our fan of the week. And all you other loves out there listening, for your chance to also be shouted out as the fan of the week, and also as a beautiful way to support the show that is free and easy, please take a moment to review our show on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. And also, you can take a screenshot of your review and email it to us at reviews@mysaluna.com, and we will send you our free self-love affirmation series, which is a really beautiful tool that you can incorporate into your life and start reprogramming some limited beliefs and some negative blocks. And so this is something that this is a tool and a practice that I've been working with personally now for over a decade, and I found it very effective. So please check it out. Send your review, again, your screenshot, to reviews@mysaluna.com. Please also be sure to subscribe to our show, and that way you don't miss out on any of these incredible interviews. I have to say that I feel so grateful that we bring in these incredible, incredible humans, which have so much to share that is beneficial and helpful and useful for all of us on our journeys. You don't miss out on the interviews, and then Thursday on our Q&A community show. And please share the show with anyone that you think would benefit. Part of the generosity of the heart that's spoken about so much in the East, in yoga and Buddhism, is sharing what you got. So it's not just about sharing money. It's about sharing resources and knowledge and love. And if you can think of anyone that might benefit from any of what we discuss on the podcast, I invite you to pass it along. And I would like to share with you as well an offering that has come directly from my heart, is our new book, Baby, here in the community, You Are More Than You Think You Are, Practical Enlightenment for Everyday Life, which is really practical. It's very, I don't even know how to describe it. It comes directly from my wanting to share very sincerely how to live your best life, what's helped me the most in my life, these teachings. And I combine it with science, which I think is important for some of us with just, you know, the discerning mind likes to latch on to some of the scientific research and also the aspect of personal story to illustrate how these teachings and this philosophy really is, can be woven into daily life. So again, it's called You Are More Than You Think You Are, and you can pick it up wherever books are sold, online, bookstores, so on and so forth. All right, so all that being said, let's get into our interview today with the amazing Dr. Will Cole. So nice to see you, Will, again.
Oh my goodness. Busy. Likewise. Great to see you.
You know, I love these podcasts because it gives us focus. I don't know about you, but yeah. You get pulled in so many directions. It's like the clarity, the focus of having a conversation feels like a real treat.
I absolutely agree. I love consulting patients. I love meeting with my teams, but just to be like, all right, now I can just talk with a friend about all these things we love. It's a very nice breath within the schedule.
Yeah, I see that you offer all the, you know, the telehealth and a lot of appointments, and I'm sure you're talking to people in different time zones and all sorts of things are going on in different people's bodies and different cases. It's a lot, I'm sure.
It is. Yeah, definitely. Mindfulness and meditation and grounding practices are a necessity. So I'm going to be using our conversation today as one big grounding practice.
I love it. And that's one of the reasons I'm so drawn to you is because you really do take this holistic approach. I think in the past, we're used to doctors sort of getting us in and out and not really listening and almost feeling like a piece of cardboard or something that we're not really talking to as whole humans. And that's been such a big missing piece, I think, in healthcare.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's the duality of good healthcare is holding both science and art. And I just think that sometimes it can be so remote and so like sterilized that we don't realize that that's a person. That's a person that has a life. That's a person that's gone through a lot. So you have to hold both to be a great clinician, in my opinion.
Yes, I agree. And so the last time we had our conversation and you were here with me on our podcast, we were talking about your latest book. I know you, and I think I had you on for your other book, The Inflammation.
Yeah, I think we've talked so many times. It's been such a blessing. But The Inflammation Spectrum was my second book. It's Ketotarian, The Inflammation Spectrum, and then Intuitive Fasting. Those are the three babies.
Exactly. We'll link to those prior ones in the show notes, which are just packed with information. But I was really inspired today by one of your social media posts that I think I saw a few weeks ago that was talking about the impact, the holistic impact on our being from trauma. And this is something that we hear about in the mental health space, but we don't always hear about its effect on a physical level. And you had this really great sort of infographic talking about autoimmunity and gut inflammation, all sorts of things. So I'd love to sort of dive into that because I think it's starting to come to the forefront now. The author of this great book I read, Your Body Keeps the Score, I think his name is Bessel van der Kolk. It's a little bit hard to pronounce. He's Norwegian, I believe. But he was saying that something like 75% of people have experienced some form of trauma, which could be from an accident, could be, you know, some sort of actual event, or it could be more from neglect over childhood. It could be many different forms. And so we need to recognize that this can really degrade our health. This can be a really big issue that, you know, maybe we don't realize the impact it's having.
Yeah, 100%. And it's such a major part of my work with patients. And that's why I talk about it on social media. And there's normally those infographics or something. It's me typing it up on stories and then just posting it up real fast because it's things that are on my mind about when I'm talking to people. I'm like, well, like this needs to be out there. So 90% of the time, what I'm posting on social media is if you notice, I typically will post around 6 p.m. or 7 p.m. because that's after when I'm done with patients. And I'm normally just kind of putting out something that I saw throughout the day. And that's a major part of it. I mean, part of our consultation process with patients is we dig into their childhood, and we dig into the mental emotional impact of that. And one of the questionnaires that's within the consultation form is called an ACE score, which is used across different modalities, but it's basically adverse childhood experiences. And we're able to look at the impact and where their ACE score is. And we then verbally via telehealth, we're talking to them via webcam, like we're talking right now, about even past child, like beyond childhood, what other sexual traumas looked like, or stressful, traumatic times in their life, loss of a loved one, deaths, things like that, even, you know, physical accidents, et cetera. But I actually haven't said about this on a podcast before, but that this is actually, and I didn't know this is what you wanted to talk about.
I know, but, I just threw this at you.
This is but this will be the topic of my next book. It's not going to come out for a while. We're always in synchronicity.
I know, we're so connected.
Yeah, it's so true. I'm like, oh man, that's just cool. So I'm like not just clinically deep in it, but as a writer, I'm deep in it too right now as well. So yeah, it's just, you're right. It is definitely a time, it's coming to a head, that we need to be having these conversations, because it's that we cannot separate any longer mental health from physical health. Mental health is physical health. Our brain is a part of our body just as much as our spleen or our stomach. And this sort of relegation of mental health is some sort of abstract thing. Dr. Daniel Amen, a friend, colleague of mine, he said, psychiatry is the only field of medicine that doesn't measure or quantify the organ in which it's treating, which I think is a really astute way of putting it. It's like, well, if you go to a cardiologist, he's going to run your lipid panel. He's going to look at, they're going to look at your lipid panel and get your numbers looking great. If you go to an endocrinologist, they're going to look at your hormones and measure your hormones. But psychiatry, for some reason, we don't want to look at the neuromechanical components to the neurophysiological components to why people are going through brain health problems. And trauma plays a part of that, and big T and little T trauma, like all types of trauma that people can go through, and how it has a physical effect on their health. And that's why really exploring with my patients both the psychological, meaning the mental, emotional, and the physiological, meaning other things within physically in the body, how does it impact each other? Because it's so interconnected. It's a lot harder though, in some sense. It's easy to say, well, these foods are inflammatory, let's stop those, let's bring in these herbal medicines, let's do these specific prescriptive things in their life to move the needle for them. You cannot tell somebody, don't stress. You cannot tell somebody, don't have your trauma anymore. Just drop it. It's definitely more all-encompassing. So as a functional medicine practitioner, I'm not a trauma specialist. So what we do is we act as sort of a quarterback in somebody's health and integrate. In other words, functional medicine is integrative medicine. The trauma specialist, the eating disorder specialist, the therapist, the somatic therapist, meditation teachers, to start to really cultivate the parasympathetic in their life.
Wow. I noticed when you listed some of the effects of trauma, the first one that you put was autoimmunity or autoimmune conditions, which we all know is on the rise. I feel like so many people that I know, I encounter, acquaintances, inner circle, larger circle, it's just coming to the forefront now. Yeah. So, and a lot of that, like you said, feels a little bit nebulous. People don't understand like what's going on. And then it sort of gets put into this sort of broad category, maybe a little bit more specific. So let's say someone is going through autoimmunity. And then they know there's, you know, this trauma part, they're starting to see a psychiatrist. What are some of the ways that we can manage that from your expertise in the body through the different systems?
Yeah. Well, the body, I mean, autoimmunity, it's estimated that 50 million Americans have an autoimmune condition. I think it's upwards of 250 million people worldwide have an autoimmune disease, and that's diagnosable. The reality is, this is the fact, is that there are millions more that are somewhere on that autoimmune inflammation spectrum. And that's what I really explore it with in the inflammation spectrum, my second book, and really in all the books, because it's just what I see clinically. I talk about this inflammation phenomenon and how to use different tools within functional medicine to attenuate that inflammation. So inflammation is not inherently bad, right? It's a product of our immune system. It's supposed to fight off viruses, kill off bacteria, heal wounds. It's not inherently bad. It's inflammation that's gone haywire. That's the problem.
Yes.
It's this forest fire that's burning in perpetuity, the breaking of the Goldilocks principle of not too high inflammation, not too low, but just right. But just about everything in the body is subject to that Goldilocks principle or homeostasis. We don't want excess hormones or deficiencies of hormones. We don't want excess gut microbiome bacteria. We don't want a deficiency of gut microbiome bacteria. So inflammation is no difference here. So autoimmunity is extremely ubiquitous, but shouldn't be normalized. And there's that larger spectrum of on one end, it's silent autoimmunity, and then autoimmune reactivity, which many of my patients are at, meaning they have noticeable, quantifiable autoimmune components to their case, like a positive marker on a lab, symptoms that they're experiencing. And doctors are saying things like, well, it looks like autoimmune-ish, but they're not able to really put you into the box of diagnosing you officially. And then the stage three is a full-blown autoimmune disease. But shockingly, researchers estimate it's about 4 to 10 years prior to that diagnosis when things were brewing on that autoimmune inflammation spectrum. So this is really all that I focused in clinically, is looking at the different iterations of how this manifests in people's lives. The good news is, no matter where you're at on that continuum, there's a lot you can do to calm the inflammation in the body. And functional medicine is really at the forefront of looking at these. What are the tools that we can integrate into our life to start having agency over our health? Because it's very reactive in the standard model of care. It's very much like, okay, let's wait till you're bad enough. Wait till your immune system is destroyed enough of parts of your body to then be put on a biologic, a steroid, an immunosuppressant, you know, something like this. That's really all the options that they have. I mean, there are like some nuances, like IVIG. There's definitely some exceptions to that rule. But for the most part, anybody with autoimmunity will say, yep, that's my options. Those are my options within the standard model of care, which is fine and great if that's working for you. And I'm not against that being a tool within somebody's toolbox, and some people need to be on those. But we just want to say, what else is there? And can we be more proactive instead of reactive? Can we start really bringing and integrating other positive things into our life? Because anybody that's on steroids or biologics will tell you, most of them will tell you, this is no walk in the park, and this can have a lot of potential side effects. And if anything, it's a piece of the puzzle, not the entire puzzle for them. So we just want to look at the other components to it. So there's a lot you can do with food. There's a lot of things you can do with the supplements. There's a lot of things you can do with other biohacking things that we integrate in patients' lives. And there's a lot of things you can do with trauma work. Start regulating your nervous system into more of a parasympathetic state. So those are the things that we integrate with our patients.
I imagine you've seen a real difference when people do incorporate the psychological or the mental care along with things like adaptogens or eliminating inflammatory foods.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's powerful. I'll tell you one person that comes to mind. And we put a lot of patients when I tell their story online. So they go to drwillcole.com, just go to the consultation page, and then you'll see that there's just like hundreds of people sharing their stories. Mm-hmm. But one person comes to mind because she was early in my career, and any practitioner, clinician, physician will tell you, like, those early days are like impressed. Like, there's just deep neural pathways there. So this lady was in her 90s. And those, I mean, I have a special heart for people that are elderly in the sense of society really just doesn't give them the respect they deserve.
Our society especially.
So, I mean, historically, from an ancestral standpoint, they were revered.
The elders, now, yes, the elders, wisdom.
Now they're treated as some like babies. They're treated like infantile nuisances to society, which is just sad to me. But anyways, this lady she came in a wheelchair. Her husband of like 70 plus years pushed her in a wheelchair, and he didn't want to lose the love of his life. And she was diagnosed with different neuropathy, neurological autoimmune problems. She was put on lots of medications and she could barely talk. She just was like not fully there. She was just would stare at you. She had sort of extreme brain fog symptoms. And he told me, he's like, I don't want to lose my wife. And we ran labs. We found out that she was being suppressed so much. Her immune system was being suppressed so much. And they had her on statin drugs that was suppressing her cholesterol level so much that it was starving her brain of the cholesterol in which it needed to make the brain matter. 25% of all your body's cholesterol is in your brain. And we coordinated with her prescribing doctor and said, like, look, her levels are really low. Like, let's like look at updated labs here. This is just too much. She's over medicated. And they were able to, as through dealing with food, dealing with functional medicine, dealing with the stress component of it all, the lady was completely transformed. She walked in a walker. She's out of the wheelchair. She was bright. She was lucid. And it was something that she said to me that why I'm even telling this story is down to this sentence. She said, I thought, when I met you, I was planning my funeral arrangements. Now I'm planning vacations with my grandkids.
Oh, I just got goosebumps.
That's why I remember it 13 years later, because like sweet Lady Blanche was telling me, like, I think of how many parents, how many grandparents, how many siblings and aunts and uncles that are going through that same thing, that didn't just randomly meet a functional medicine doctor, that they just thought that was their lot in life. There's nothing they could do. We as a human race have so much agency over our health, but we're not even having the conversation to give people what their body needs to feel great.
Yeah. If you're only going to take one supplement a day, I recommend it to be our Soluna Feel Good SBO Probiotics. Boost your energy, immunity, skin health, moods, and overall wellness today and every day with this incredible formula. This unique formula contains prebiotics, postbiotics, and multiple clinically researched probiotic strains of soil-based organisms, SBOs, in the proper ratio that are hardy enough to survive stomach acid and get to your gut. Use code BOOSTHEALTH to get 20% off your first order today at mysoluna.com. That's BOOSTHEALTH for 20% off your first order today. Wow, that is so powerful. Thank you for sharing that. And on the other end of the spectrum, we see so many children are being pushed towards, you know, oh, you have attention deficit disorder, like get on all these meds right away without even trying to shift their diet or shift their lifestyle or teach them about meditation, which now my older son just turned 6 and we do that. We try to meditate almost every evening because he's in kindergarten. You know, they get out in the world and they need to have those tools as well. So we're seeing it across the board. And I'm sure you're just seeing the effect of people coming to you that have been in the system for so long.
Yeah. It's dysregulated immune systems and dysregulated nervous systems.
Yeah.
The dysregulated immune system is chronic inflammation. Inflammation is a product of your immune system. So really a lot of what we're seeing as a society is really both of those things, some more nervous system, some more immune system. But the reality is they probably are both dysregulated in a lot of people to various degrees. So chronic inflammation and a dysregulated nervous system and the autonomic nervous system is just completely thrown off. We see a lot of cases that have, well, they're labeled with something called dysautonomia, which is a lot of the trauma work. It really has to do with that sympathetic fight or flight system that's in hyperdrive, right? And that's why so much of what your work and my work is doing is really just starting to calibrate the nervous system, because there's nothing inherently wrong with the sympathetic nervous system either. We just need both systems, both the sympathetic and the parasympathetic, to both be functioning appropriately. And the sympathetic cannot always be triggered, cannot always be on fire, but it is for many people, and they just feel that wired, tired hyperdrive all of their life.
When I started to take a deep dive into yoga and, you know, Vedic philosophy and Ayurveda, the core of it, it's all nervous system, because as we talked about on your podcast, it's either, you know, peripheral nervous system, we're always looking out here, and ego and reacting and trying to get our worth and our validation out here, which is impossible, right? Or we have this deeper sense of central nervous system, groundedness, our anchor inside of us. Mm-hmm. So it all goes down to that in terms of that philosophy. And it's amazing the crossover now into functional medicine. So let's say we know, okay, I think we all have childhood stuff, and so we can recognize it. So we take tools, we do therapy, we do whatever it is. But what are some of the herbs or the supplements or the foods that can be supportive as we're going through mental healing, emotional healing?
Yeah. So some different, and let's talk about the way that I said it earlier, is the physiological and the psychological. I think both of those should be seen as meals or medicines, right?
Yes.
And the psychological meals in intuitive fasting, in my newest book, I call them metaphysical meals, because that sort of mental, emotional, spiritual stuff is feeding your body just as much as the next meal is.
So love it.
Meditation, yogic science, these other trauma work things are meals. And we're integrating things like that. Nourishment, exactly. Sort of train the vagus nerve and train the nervous system to calm down and allow it to unwind. So we look at things like EMDR as well, and DNRS and FSM, all these sort of acronyms for different modalities or different tools to start to support the parasympathetic. And then the physiological medicines, physical stuff that you asked about, are the other side of that coin of the parasympathetic. So the herbs that we bring in are different adaptogens that you talked about. So have a lot of science around it. But science, as with most of these things, it's catching up with antiquity. Humans would have used these traditionally for thousands of years. In every part of the world, different adaptogens have been used medicinally. And now we know, okay, these things have science behind it. We know the pathways, we know the mechanisms, but just anecdotally, humans would have used these for a long time. So things like, if you go to India and you look at Tulsi.
I was just going to say Tulsi is the first thing. Oh my gosh. It's like our brains are like, but I have a cup of Tulsi every evening almost. It just makes me feel good. And then Dr. J, my Ayurvedic teacher, says, oh, you know, the each home is supposed to have traditionally a holy basil plant, Tulsi, which blesses the home. So there's this cultural element, but it's part of the stress management. And now there's more science.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah, it's so cool. It has amazing science. So holy basil, Tulsi, it's like, I think it's known as in Ayurveda as like the mother of all herbs or something.
Yes.
Queen of all herbs, something like that.
Yes, exactly.
And then ashwagandha is another one used in Ayurvedic medicine. And then you go a little bit west from there into Siberia. There's Siberian ginseng. Mm. You can go down into South America and maca. And you can go in the rhodiola is, I believe, used in Russia. So, I mean, they're used around the world. These are different adaptogenic herbs. And then there's different non-herbs that have adaptogenic qualities as well, because even a lot of medicinal mushrooms have adaptogenic properties. They're not, you know, depending on who you talk to, they may or may not be classified as adaptogens, but they have a sort of modulating effect on the body. And that's one of the definitions of adaptogens, is that they regulate. If the cortisol levels are high or cortisol levels are low, it helps to just help the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis, basically, and kind of shift the nervous system and more into a parasympathetic state. So those are things like lion's mane and chaga, turkey tail, things like that. So adaptogens are some, and then different minerals.
Sorry, Will. Can we pause there for one second?
Yeah, let's go.
in a practical sense, sometimes we hear, oh my gosh, look, maca and ashwagandha. And I get this question, I'm sure you do too, where people have that mindset, well, I need to take everything. Or right. How much is too much? Or am I supposed to cycle the adaptogens? What is your, you know, what do you recommend as an approach? Because there's so many plants now. We hear all this stuff. And it's, oh my gosh, do I have to buy all this stuff? And is it good to take everything at once? All the adaptogens?
Yeah. No, thanks for making us go back there, because I feel that's important part. It's like, you don't have to do all the things. I just listed all those things to kind of give you a little menu and to impress you with my knowledge. But
we're already impressed. Okay. Don't worry, Will.
But it's not being, I'm not being prescriptive to everyone. Like, you need all these things. Yeah. And like, unless you're going to fail if you don't do all these things.
It's overwhelming, right?
It is overwhelming.
Oh my gosh, I'm supposed to take everything.
And then they're stressing about the thing that's supposed to bring them anti-stress in their life, which is like not what my intention is here. So no, I would say start with one. And here's the cool thing with adaptogens. Many of them today in the age that we live in with, you know, consumer and products and innovative brands and things, they will get blends of these.
Yes.
So you don't have to get like the holy basil by itself necessarily, and the rhodiola and the ashwagandha and the lion's mane. A lot of them will be blends, which are like if you go to reputable brands that are respected within the space, that have transparency, that are getting good quality, and you're vetting them, then you really can get blends of a lot of these. But I mean, teas are a great way to do it too, where they're relatively inexpensive and you can make teas out of these as well, like you mentioned with the holy basil tea, which tastes really good. It's a mild taste. Yeah,
exactly. So, and it's calming. And the, you know, I think the heat, a hot elixir for me helps me slow down in the evening. It's part of my evening practice because you're sipping. It sort of says to me, oh, it's the end of the day. So back to like the mental, emotional component as well.
Absolutely. And in Asia as well, another adaptogen that came to mind was Shilajit. Is really good in the evening as well. But anyway, so all of these have different properties. They all have different strengths in the sense of that the research is kind of focused in certain areas. So I've highlighted them before. And actually in Ketotarian, actually, my first book, I talk a lot about, there's like a whole adaptogen section in that book because I love adaptogen so much. So they could go in there if they want to look at, and I highlight the sort of individual research around each one. And then I do mention them in the inflammation spectrum as well in the second book. So yeah, you don't need all of them. I would start off low and slow, pick up one that resonates with you. Then once you've done some research, you can kind of see, oh, I'm going through this. Like this one has more research around that. Let me focus on that. And you don't necessarily have to take it forever and ever either. I think it's for most people, they take it during times that they're really focusing on their health and they're wanting to nourish themselves. And they then when they feel like it's really helped them, then they can start to come off of it and always can go back to it when they want to. Or like if it's just one thing, if it's just like a holy basil tea, then that may be something they do from a maintenance standpoint every day. And that's part of their nourishment. It's part of their self-care. It's part of their taking care of themselves. So that's fine too. You can take them every day. They're safe things to take.
I was going to ask that if you take something for a long period, it doesn't start to lose its efficacy per se.
No, it doesn't. But I would say this is that there are things that serve you for certain seasons of your life sometimes. And people will know, okay, this got me so far. It really was helpful. But now I want to move into something different. So instead of adding more and more things into what I lovingly call a supplement graveyard, where you just have like tons of crap and you don't even know why you're taking it anymore.
It's just more and more.
Yeah. Like part of my job in functional medicine is editing that supplement graveyard down. It's like, okay, what are the needle movers for you? And it's not like any of these things are inherently bad, even though, you know, I want to vet those things too. But like for the most of the part, it's all well-intentioned, good, natural, healthy things. But it's like, do you really need to be on that much stuff? And it's like, let's start to whittle down to what are the biggest, most impactful, positive needle movers. And then the bigger question is, or just as big of a question is, where can food play into here? Like, what can we get through food instead of trying to over supplement. I don't want that. So I want to be effective, but still be cost effective and practical and sustainable for people to keep taking things. So yeah, that's kind of my thoughts on not just adaptogens, but really supplements at large. Because the other adaptogenic things to support the nervous system, to support the endocrine, the stress response in the body, are things like the different amino acids. So L-theanine can be very helpful. GABA can be very helpful. That's sort of the anti-anxiety neurotransmitter. Magnesium can be a game changer for people. For sure. CBD tool as well. It works on GABAergic pathways, sort of the GABA supporting pathways, and T regulatory cell pathways, which is the anti-inflammatory mechanisms for people. So yeah, these are some of my top brain stress nervous system supporters.
It's interesting. I know this is like a sidebar, but they're starting to, you know, different clinics and more research coming out about microdosing. Different mushrooms and things that, you know, I don't know, it's preliminary. We'll see how that plays out. People are using it for depression and anxiety, different things. So again, just another whole category.
Yeah.
Mushrooms.
Fully. Yeah. I mean, psychedelic mushrooms like psilocybin has some really compelling research. And a lot of these psychedelics are being fast-tracked by the FDA because of the amount of evidence that's out there. Mm-hmm. So if you've not heard of the work of, if you don't know him, I need to connect you to Dr. Will Hsu. Out of LA. He's from New York. Well, he's actually from Orange County originally, but anyways, he's lived in New York for many years, but he's in LA right now doing amazing work in the realm of, he's a psychiatrist, medical doctor, and he does a lot of the research with MAPS, which is sort of the multidisciplinary psychedelic research institute that's looking at all this data and the benefits of psilocybin and ketamine and other psychedelics.
So shifting back to food for a minute, as much I can pick out of you. Yeah. I think it was the same post, or maybe it was a different social media post, where you were talking about, was it trauma or food sensitivities and how that can also ameliorate over time. And some of the ones you listed were, you know, eggs, egg whites. We hear a lot about gluten. We hear about dairy, but there were some interesting ones. So can you talk a little bit about, maybe from the standpoint of, yes, supporting as we're shifting through trauma, but also secondarily, over time, my sensitivities don't have to be so acute. I can start to have a wider range of foods as well.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. This is something, again, if we hold both of those wings of healthcare equally, like the psychological and the physiological, both of those things to support the parasympathetic, that applies to food sensitivities, food reactions as well. Because if the nervous system and the immune system's in hyperdrive, right? And there's, for most of these people, because of those, there's the psychological offenders and the physiological offenders, the gut is inflamed and there's increased intestinal permeability or leaky gut syndrome. So things are passing through the gut that shouldn't be able to pass through the gut, like undigested food proteins, like bacterial toxins called lipopolysaccharides or LPS. And that creates this event that's called molecular mimicry, where the immune system, which I think is a beautiful, like eloquent way that researchers describe it, they'll say the immune system's lost recognition of self, which I think, think of that, what's happening on a mental, emotional, spiritual level. Wow. And that's also happening on a physical level. It's like, my immune system forgot what my thyroid was and is attacking it. My immune system is overreacting to my brain and to my joints and my stomach. And a lot of these people, because of the trauma implication, that's also what they're doing on a mental, emotional, spiritual level too.
Well, I've never heard it put that way. Well, that's incredible. We lose our anchor. So then we're trying to, you know, get it outside of ourselves somehow, which is always uncertain. It's always shifting and moving. So then we get more confused and ungrounded. So then the body reflects that.
Absolutely. Wow. Yeah. It is pretty profound. So you have to heal the gut. So the physiological tool in the realm of food sensitivities is in part dealing with the physical things that drive that physiological stressor. So that's healing the gut, like really working on nourishing the gut, allowing the gut time to repair. So that's going off of these inflammatory foods and bringing in really nourishing gut healing foods. And then dealing with a lot of physiological things that perpetuate gut problems. So we look at things like different biotoxin components, like mold toxins, mycotoxins, viral toxins, bacterial toxins, Lyme disease and co-infections. Because what happens is it stresses out those biotoxins paired with leaky gut syndrome, stress out the nervous system. They decrease the brain, gut, the gut-brain communication, and decrease what's called a migrating motor complex, the MMC, which the bacteria and the yeast and fungus start to grow into the small intestine. So a lot of people have dysbiosis or imbalances in the gut. They have things like SIBO, small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, which then perpetuates a big vicious inflammatory cycle. So you have to deal with these other systemic chronic infections, biotoxin problems as well. That's just the physiological stuff. The psychological stuff is really looking at trauma and stress, both current and in the past, and how that is living in their body today. And again, this is just very well documented in theories like the polyvagal theory and what is possible when you start allowing the body's nervous system to calm down. Because then that gut-brain axis, and the gut and brain are inextricably linked, right? The gut is known as the second brain. 95% of serotonin, their happy neurotransmitter, is made in the gut and stored in the gut. It's actually formed, the gut is formed from the same fetal tissue when babies are growing in their mom's womb. So these are very much central to healing food sensitivities. So until you deal with the physiological and the psychological with that, the food sensitivities will perpetuate. But when you deal with these issues, then a lot of foods that were reactive at some point can start. You're like, the analogy that I use is like, if your mug is overflowing, right? I have my little mug here. We all have different mug sizes, and that's your bioindividuality, and that's the heart of functional medicine. We're all created differently. Some people have massive mugs and they're smoking and drinking and staying up late and eating whatever they want. And then normally my patients, that's like their family members or their friends, and like, how the heck can they do all this stuff? And like, I can't get away with anything. They tend to have smaller mugs. And they know how to keep their mug close from overflowing, but it's going to very easily hit its tipping point. We can't change our mug size, which is our genetics, but we can change what we put in our mugs, which is the epigenetic stuff. It's the lifestyle choices that we have a lot of agency over. So it's the foods we're eating or not eating. It's our stress levels. It's trauma. It's toxins. It's that stuff. Lack of sleep. All of these things influence that cup overflow. So we need to work on emptying that mug over the course of months and years that we're with patients to clear that stuff out. So they have resilience, they have wiggle room, and they're not going to pay for it if they deviate from their strict regimen of eating like, you know, five foods. I want them to have as much food variety as possible, but that's going to take time to heal that.
It's going to take time. And there's, like you said, there's so many different components to that. Practically speaking, there's a lot I could ask you about, but one thing that was like, oh my gosh, the mold. I saw another post you wrote about mold and, you know, those mycotoxicity. How easy is it to get mold out of your system? Can we assume that most all of us have some sort of mold issue going on? Is that common?
It is, but it's not a problem in everybody. Look, so mold is everywhere, but not all mold is toxic. So you don't want to make it into like this sort of evil thing and people have to live in some sort of sterilized bubble. And it's like, no, humans would have been interplaying with mold for a long time. So it's actually talked about in the Old Testament, in the Torah. Yeah. The Bible instructs people to like remediate the house if it's a certain color and like burn the house down if you can't get it repaired. So like this has been used for thousands of years and they knew this stuff made people sick. And now in our culture, we treat it as almost like just an aesthetic thing. It's like, if I can't see it, it's not there. And people will say, my new home, it's been 5 years, it's been 10 years, there's no mold in here. And they think just because they can't see it, it's not there. But many homes, and I hear this from construction workers that are patients or construction workers that within the industry and remediators in the industry and mold experts in the industry, and they'll tell me a lot of homes are built very tight that they can't breathe, that a lot of older homes are built with, it could breathe more. And that's one of the reasons why a lot of people in these new, like beautiful homes that they spend lots of money on, it's like the house is not breathing and it's a pipe leak or some leak. And it's over time, even in dry, arid areas, I've seen mold problems in Arizona. This isn't just a South Florida problem. This is really, or a Hawaii problem. This could be anywhere. Because it's the actual home infrastructure that's at play there and leaks. So it's not all mold is the problem. It's toxic mold, how much toxic mold, and then what is your bio-individual tolerance for mold? Because I see spouses where the husband's fine, but his wife has different methylation gene variants, different HLA gene variants, which influences how your body handles biotoxins. That's back to that mug size. You know, they have smaller mugs in that area and their mugs overflowing by this okra toxin or this Stachybotrys black mold toxin. Mm-hmm. And that's what we have to quantify. It's what's your bioindividuality here with genetic variants and detox impairments and methylation and endocannabinoid gene variants? And then what are you exposed to and how much of it are you exposed to? So that's kind of the things we're always looking at.
But is that something you run tests for or?
We just completely based off of data. So we look at blood tests, we measure different immune markers like the TGF beta 1, C4A, MSH, C3A, C4A. Those are not definitive on mold alone. They're just sort of largely looking at biotoxins and inflammation. And there are many things that can spike those numbers. So those are good conventional data points on blood labs, but you have to further investigate. So then we'll run urine mycotoxin test that actually measures the specific type of mold toxin within the body. And look, this is crazy that it never ceases to amaze me that I will find mold in people that it wasn't a current living space at all, even though the current place should be ruled out or work should be ruled out or your car needs to be ruled out. There are different class action lawsuits right now with different car manufacturers where it's in the air conditioning unit. It wasn't even at their home. But then for some people, it was like a college dorm they had in the 80s or 90s, and it's still in their system now.
Wow.
It's just not able to methylate and detox out. So this is how far back we can go back for some people. Or I'll see a mom and daughter as patients and they haven't lived together since the 90s. And they knew there was mold in the home that they lived in the 90s. And they both have the same mold in their system today.
Oh my gosh.
Pretty crazy.
Well, I have to say, I've been thinking about mold. I think I shared this with you. I split my time now between LA and Hawaii, and I never, I don't really see mold here. Like you said, it doesn't mean it's not here, but in Hawaii, it's so humid and wet. You know, if something happened, like leave my flip flops out in a certain place, like by the morning, they're covered with mold. So it's all over the place there, which got me thinking, wow, I don't know. Maybe I should get tested as well.
You should. I would run a mycotoxin test. And again, we see many people. And look, and even if it's high in your system, it doesn't even necessarily mean it's causing you symptoms right now. But the safest amount of level of toxic mold in your body is zero. So even if it's not creating symptoms right now, that's a blessing. But let's clear this stuff out because you don't want any toxic mold in your body in any amount, because over time, these things are carcinogenic. Many of them are. So you don't want these excess things in your body. But look, going back to my earlier statement, I really believe humans would have been around these molds for a long time. It's not just about the mold. We are already overflowing. Our cup's already overflowing. Like the mold's just one thing. And it's like, look, something's got to give here. And it's contributing to filling up that mug.
With the mold, do we get it out? Do we chelate it with things like spirulina? Or is it like, how do we get it out?
Yeah, it's a combination of things.
Chelate.
Okay. I mean, I've heard it said twice. I'm no Merriam-Webster, but I would say chelate. So binders, biofilm disruptors, antimicrobials, detox support, methylation support, brain support, mitochondrial support. Wow. So there are different herbs, botanicals, micronutrients, pharmaceuticals sometimes to clear this stuff out. Sweating is one that's very helpful. Saunas can be very helpful. So yeah, it's a combination of things, but it's completely, I see this stuff cleared out all the time. It's amazing. It's not a quick fix by any means, but it's one that you can track the data over time and see this stuff cleared out.
Wow.
But then here's the one thing is that even when you clear this out, going back to the nervous system and the fight or flight, sometimes when you clear all this stuff out, they're a lot better, but they're still stuck at a plateau. And that's when a lot of the psychological things come into play to allow their nervous system and give their nervous system the permission to calm down. Because they've been in that fight or flight response for so long that it's like, okay, they really need to lean into the meditation and the mindfulness now to say, okay, you're safe now.
Yes.
You were, the check engine light was on for a reason for a long time, but the threat is gone. Now it's time to calm down.
I love that. Speaking about Merriam-Webster encyclopedias, I feel like anytime I ask you a question, it's like, so I could go on forever, but I do have one last practical question. Thank you so much again for sharing your incredible wisdom with us. Well, going back to when you were saying about reintroducing foods, and we know one of the really healthy thing for gut health is fiber, which, you know, helping with the short chain fatty acids and the inflammation. But some people that have such a compromised system get so bloated with fiber. And we know, you know, sometimes we need to cook the food more, avoid certain things. But what are some of the things you say to your patients in terms of reintroducing really healthy fiber and plant foods when their gut is so sensitive? It's been so compromised.
It's true. I mean, we, for many people, will start them on actually a lower fiber diet for a time. And it's not the fiber's fault. Like you said, the fiber is prebiotic food for the gut microbiome, which ferments that fiber and makes those beneficial short-chain fatty acids like butyrate, which you need to calm inflammation and have a healthy immune system and brain function. Actually, butyrate is biochemically related to beta-hydroxybutyrate, which is the ketone for your brain. So it is definitely important. But when you have such a reactive system, if somebody has, this isn't everybody, these are people that really have very reactive systems that are reacting to lots of things. We put them on different protocols depending on their preference and their labs and all of that. And that's their sort of the science and art of this too, is having this be sustainable and realistic and enjoyable for somebody. But soups and stews can be a game changer because it's basically pre-digesting the food in many ways to say, okay, you don't have to work so hard, gut. I'm going to give you a little proverbial siesta here to just rest as much as you can, right?
I love that. And so Ayurvedic. It's all the kitchen.
Yes, exactly.
Soupy stuff. And that is so in alignment. Yeah, I love that. And amazing.
Yeah. And then work your way up from there. Like we put people on lower FODMAP protocols, which is a fermentable sugar that's in lots of things like onions and garlic and cruciferous vegetables and apples and many grains and legumes. All can be fine part of somebody's diet. But if somebody has a reactive system and has SIBO and has mycotoxin problems and has autoimmunity, it's not those foods' fault. It's the body's immune response against those foods. So let's get your gut strong and healthy and resilient. And then you can work on reintroduction. And then that's what we do. We work on the reintroduction over time.
You know, it's like we can only like take so much at a certain time, then we integrate. And I kind of feel like, wow, my brain is full of inspiration with all this wisdom. So I think this is a really good place to pause.
Right, perfect.
We can integrate this. And, you know, there's just so many great resources we'll link to in the show notes to go further. You've given us so much to digest, you know, on all levels.
It's a bad pun. It's a bad pun right now.
But Will, tell us where we can find out more about your incredible work. And I'm so happy that you offer telehealth. I just want to say that up front, because not everybody has access in their immediate surroundings, in their community, to this kind of healthcare. So it's such an incredible resource to call on in your clinic.
Thank you. I love what I get to do. Everything's at drwillcole.com. That's drwillcole.com. Yeah. And I talk about this stuff on The Art of Being Well on my podcast, which you were a guest on. Thank you so much. I'd love for you to come back anytime. All the stuff's at drwillcole.com though.
Amazing. Well, thank you again so much, Will, for taking the time and just being such a positive force what the world needs right now. Integration, holism, and just lots of love integrated into this kindness, humanity. So thank you so much. I love you so much. I
love
respect
you
your work so much.
Thank you, friend.
Well, I hope you enjoyed our interview today as much as I enjoyed having the conversation. Please do check out our show notes over at mysaluna.com, where I offer links to other podcasts I think you would really enjoy, as well as articles and blogs and meditations and food recipes. And there's so much on the website. And I'm really excited to announce that we are launching Kimberly's Corner, which is going back to my roots of blogging, where I will be putting in regular information that is also right from my heart, my free flow writing about different topics and different ideas that I feel really passionate about sharing. I'll also be producing vlogs, so they'll be in video form as well as the written word. So that's coming soon. So sending you so much love and so much support. And remember that you can always write in questions to me over also on mysaluna.com that we answer on our Thursday community show. So take great care. Namaste. Peace and love.